Welcome to the Terminal to Triathlon podcast. I am Mark Bryant. I created Terminal to Triathlon to raise money to literally help me stay alive and make my healing journey my career. My aim through my journey is to help empower those with cancer to see that there are other treatments and strategies to work alongside conventional medicine. I was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia in June 2015. Received a full intensity stem cell transplant with my brother as my donor. 6 months later, I had a relapse. I told my oncologist to not tell me the revised prognosis and I just focused on getting better. I've since discovered I was considered terminal, put on palliative care, but I'm still here 6 years later because some of the strategies I've learned are obviously working. My aim through my journey is to help empower those with cancer to see that there are other treatments and strategies to work alongside conventional medicine. I am looking for sponsors and patrons to support my mission, so please take a look at the show notes to see how you can get involved. 50% of all the revenue will be given to other cancer patients to support them on their healing journeys. In episode 1, I spoke about how I was diagnosed and also to my great friend Jonathan Miles, who had prostate cancer. In episode 2, I spoke to Dr. Scott Scher all about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. In episode 3, I speak to Pete McCleave, who is behind the 10,000donors.com mission. He's on a global mission to help himself find a stem cell match and to help others as well. So far, he's found 86,000 donor recipients and 16 confirmed matches, which is potentially 16 saved lives. In episode 4, I spoke to Callum Stronner, who is a nutritionist and a coach, about how we are both using endurance events to help us on our healing journeys. And in this episode, I'm going to speak to Dr. Maharaj, who I met at the Hippocrates Health Institute in Florida. This is a health institute I visited to learn all about complementary cancer recovery strategies back in 2016. Dr. Maharaj is the founder and medical director of the Maharaj Institute of Immune Regenerative Medicine. And without him, I do not believe I would be here right now. He is an oncologist and a transplant physician that has developed a speciality in immune regenerative medicine, which I believe should be at the center of medicine for the future. So let's dive straight in. Dr. Maharaj, thanks for being here.
Well, first of all, Mark, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an honor to be on with you.
Dr. Maharaj played a significant role over the last, I think, 2017 when I first arrived to your institute over in
It's Boynton Beach.
Just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, where you started, because I know you're UK originally and then you ended up heading over to the States. So just tell us about Dr. Maharaj and your journey.
I did my medical training at the University of Glasgow in Scotland. And I was very fortunate that after I finished my medical degree, I was able to join a pioneering team at the University of Glasgow. It was actually part of the Scottish Bone Marrow Transplant Program, where essentially what we were doing was looking to see how we could improve the immune system of patients who had had leukemia and to use their own stem cells to be able to recover the immune system. So stem cells are the basis of the cells that forms the immune system. So our work was really pioneering in the sense that we were able to take individuals who had already developed cancer and major cancers like leukemia, find enough normal stem cells that could turn back on the immune system and get these patients into long-term cancer-free survival. And that is actually now a standard of care. I was involved with the team that started pioneering that in Scotland.
Was that the same stem cell transplant that I had, where I had a donor?
Yes. We were also doing these transplants. They're called allogeneic transplants, where you use a donor's stem cells, whereas the types of transplants we pioneered were autologous. But the issue came about was that there weren't enough donors, or it was difficult to find donors to treat a patient who had leukemia. So we had to find alternative ways to be able to treat more patients. And that's why we developed that process where we could treat a patient, get their disease into remission, take their stem cells, and then essentially use those stem cells to regenerate their immune system. The type of transplant you had was actually from a donor, and I believe the donor was your brother. He provided his cells to you.
When did the first stem cell transplants start happening in medicine?
It was in the late 60s, and it was actually started by a group in Seattle. The pioneering work was done in the late 60s, early 70s, where this process was actually an experimental procedure. And it was done with the rationale that the bone marrow is an organ. And so if it's diseased, you destroy it and you replace it with a normal organ, which comes from a donor. So that was the rationale for it, just like there was pioneering work for kidney transplants, heart transplants, etc. So it was treated in the same way as it was an organ transplant.
Is that standard care for a lot of blood cancers, stem cell transplants?
Yes, it is. It's a standard of care now. You were diagnosed in 2015, I believe, 2 years before you came to see us. And you actually had the sort of typical symptoms that tends to occur, which was that you were complaining of fatigue, tiredness, bone pains, rib pains. And when it was diagnosed, you had chemotherapy to reduce the tumor burden in the bone marrow to get it to a lower level. And it was after that occurred, when you were in what we call remission, then you had the bone marrow transplant. So your brother's stem cells were collected. These are stem cells collected from the bone marrow. And then you received further ablative chemotherapy to destroy your bone marrow and for his stem cells to be put into you. So essentially, the stem cells that you have in you are actually from your brother.
I remember being told it was a full intensity stem cell transplant, and yes, it is one of the most toxic treatments that humans are exposed to in the cancer world in a short-term intensity setting.
Yes. Well, if you can think about after Chernobyl, when the nuclear reactor blew up, what happened there was that basically the radiation that people were exposed to destroyed their bone marrow. They basically died because of that. Well, the chemotherapy and the radiation that you were given over a 4 or 5 day period was of the same intensity to destroy your bone marrow.
Wow. Day 0+7 was the darkest days.
Right, right.
And with stem cell transplants, from a physician's standpoint, when you were practicing this type of treatment, what are the usual prognoses for somebody going through a stem cell transplant in isolation?
When you talk to a patient about a stem cell transplant, you have to talk to them about what are the alternative options that are available, because this is not something that the patient takes on lightly because of the toxicities associated with it. So depending on the disease type and depending on the stage of disease, we will often quote to the patients a mortality, a procedural mortality, which can vary between 15 and 45%. That means you have the procedure and the risk of coming out alive after that procedure can be between 15 and 45%.
Yeah, I remember having in my head, whether I was told this or not, it was a 50-50 chance on the way in, just from the right treatment, let alone the illness.
Yes.
And then I had the relapse.
Yes.
And then I said, look, don't tell me the revised prognosis. I'll just focus on getting better. That's just talked a little bit about stem cell transplants. But now you run your own institute in Boynton Beach in Florida. What sort of practices are you doing there now? Has it changed since I was last there?
It has continued to evolve to basically improve the outcome of our patients. Essentially, as a bone marrow transplant physician, we were just talking about toxicities that I would have to explain to the patients, that we were going to do this major procedure, very expensive procedure, that first of all, the toxicities and then dying as a result of the procedure. And then we never even talked about, well, what would be the outcomes for the patients? But you summed it up by saying 50-50. Then we also have to take into account the type, because not all leukemias are the same. You can have what's called good prognosis, and then you can also have poor prognosis, meaning good outcomes and poor outcomes. Unfortunately, you had one of the worst types. It was a Philadelphia positive acute lymphoblastic leukemia, but the relapse rate is high after the transplant. And unfortunately, you fell into that group. So I felt that after having done over 100 transplants completely outpatient at our institute here in Boynton Beach, with a 0% transplant-related mortality, could we harness the effect of the immune system, which is really what causes the long-term for the patients, without having to give all of that toxic chemotherapy before. So our work being how can we improve the outcomes of our patients by focusing on the immune system and minimizing the effects of chemotherapy, ablative chemotherapy, and the toxicities. To sum it up, we want to do what works and we want to get the best outcomes for our patients, but we also want to get the least toxicities the patient could experience. Mm-hmm. And hence the reason why I chose to develop an outpatient approach. To be able to have patients be able to spend their evenings when they go home with their family in their own homes, but at the same time not have all the severe toxicities or severe side effects that would be experienced with a chemotherapy or traditional transplant.
And just along that, the immunotherapy work, which we'll dive into a little bit more in a minute, but when did you launch the stem cell harvesting for healthy people? So anybody that has a vibrant immune system. I remember you saying from the age of 18 plus, it's a good time to harvest the stem cells. A lot of people, even in the UK, harvest the umbilical cord cells and harvest them and store them for later. Just tell us a little bit about harvesting an adult set of stem cells. What's the benefits of that?
First of all, before going to that, the reason why I set this program up was because the ability to bank people's stem cells came about because you were very fortunate because your brother was a match for you. There are many people who need a match or need stem cells and they can't find a donor. Or if the donor they find, they're so mismatched that the risk of complications would be high. So I felt that another way around it, again, based upon our own experience of utilizing individuals' own stem cells to repair their immune system, a good way as a sort of an explanation for storing your immune system when you're healthy basically is a way to be able to be proactive about our health for the future. And let's say you take members of a family who have one type of cancer, the risk of cancer in that family is significantly increased as well. So if somebody who has a blood cancer, the risk of a family member also getting cancer is 2.5 times greater. So this would be a way when, let's say, someone in the family was affected, other members think of their mortality more seriously then. And so instead of saying, well, I'll eat well, I'll exercise, I'll sleep, I'll do everything that I wasn't doing before, another way is to bank their immune system and put it in the bank. So now they know that if in the future a problem should arise with their immune systems, they've got those stem cells plus the cells of their immune system. So it's a proactive way of being able to offer individuals a solution that if they needed it later and they ran out of options, that they would have this.
Because it makes complete sense. Like, I broke my immune system and it would have been useful to have them in storage from when I was 18, when I was super vibrant, super young. So it should be the future. One of the strategies is don't get ill. Store your own stem cells. And if you do get ill, bring them back for later. What about the young blood work that you're doing?
Yeah, I'd like to sort of put it in perspective about the three sort of areas that I recall this, the three R's. So the first R we just talked about, which is basically store your stem cells in your immune system for replacement at a later date. And the second is basically the immune restoration, which is the treatment that we did for you. And then the third is basically with aging and advanced aging, the immune system basically takes a nosedive after 65. And in fact, we're seeing it in younger people, many people under 55, and COVID-19 has brought that into perspective, that most people are worried about their immune systems and they need to be worried. And it's not so much age related, although it tends to be associated with age, that after 65, that the immune system declines. So our whole approach has been, let's measure the immune system. Let's see where somebody is on that. And let's come up with strategies to be able to correct and keep their immune system strong. So from that perspective, an aging individual who has basically what we call stem cell exhaustion. With stem cell exhaustion, their numbers of stem cells that are functioning has gone to a very low level. And that means that their immune system is actually not functioning well. So they're vulnerable to all the diseases associated with aging and aging of the immune system. We call that immune senescence.
Yeah.
Our approach in that group of people is to basically say, okay, let's see if we could recover your immune system by taking the factors that are present in the blood of a young donor who has been specially treated, where their stem cells have been activated and their stem cells are releasing their young stem cell factors into the plasma, which also contains about 7,000 proteins that are in a young person, which are all basically regenerating that individual. And we take that and we give it back to an aging person with the idea that all of these proteins comes from the young stem cells of the young donor and repair those aging cells and recover their immune system.
So the three R's?
So the first one is replacement. That's banking for the future.
Yeah.
The second one was restoration. That's you.
Yeah.
And the third one was actually reprogramming. That is using the factors from the young blood to reprogram the aging cells.
And have these trials kicked off for the young blood yet?
Yes, our trial has been going on for a couple of years now. We have been identifying young donors. We've been collecting their products and then giving it back to aging individuals. And so, yes, so it's moving along. It's coming along very well.
I always have the vision, picture of me harvesting my stem cells.
Yes. I mean, essentially, that's what our goal is basically to put away some insurance for you for the future, because one of the effects of all the treatment that you had is that it basically has potentially caused some damage to your cells. And we see this. If you look at a molecular level of patients who've received chemotherapy, you will see that their cells are aging faster. So we want to be able to have you looking as great as you are now, but in the future also have you looking the same age and feeling the same way.
Inside out.
Inside out, yes.
What I found really interesting when I first arrived, it was a big decision to leave the UK. My oncologist in the UK was saying that I was potentially wasting my kids' inheritance. It's quite a challenging process to make some of these very difficult, life-defining decisions when you have such contradictory advice, you know, from two people I trust and respect. What I found really insightful is that when I arrived, it wasn't just about the disease. It was all of the other tests that I didn't even know I was getting. Gut biome testing, micronutrient testing, heavy metal testing, and goodness knows what else testing. So what's your approach there? And it's not very often that you'll see an oncologist taking that approach, more of a holistic approach.
Well, I think that the approach that I take is basically, let's call it a whole approach. And I mean, essentially, my work going back to our pioneering days was I'm absolutely convinced that the cure of cancer is based upon correcting the immune system. And cancer is very curable because it's preventable. So if you prevent cancer, then cancer doesn't occur. So my approach has been focusing on the immune system. And so when you focus on the immune system and you take that approach, you have to look at the gut and you have to look at the microbiome of the gut, because 80% of the immune system is in the gut. And the microbiome of the gut basically affects the immune system, because if you have an abnormal microbiome, therefore the immune system becomes abnormal. And then there's also the gut-brain connection. So the first thing that we did, if you recall, was basically I measured your immune system. We found that your natural killer cell function and your T cells, and also the factors that are produced by these cells that normally kill cancer cells, were basically virtually zero. I mean, there was nothing there. So that means that the donor cells, although that your brother was very healthy, when his cells went into you, they basically were not functioning. So our first goal was to get them functioning again. And then the second goal was basically, how could we make sure that when we corrected your immune system, we looked at all the factors that are basically important. So your gut was quite important. So looking at micronutrients in your blood, which actually feeds your cells, looking at the foods that you were eating that was driving inflammation, and also looking at metals or heavy metals or toxins you were exposed to, which would again affect your immune system. You're aware that I'm often asked to appear with celebrities looking at the effects of toxins. One of the celebrities I appeared with on a movie that was being made for Netflix was Tony Robbins. And Tony Robbins had developed mercury poisoning because he was eating a lot of fish. And his levels of mercury were so high that it actually caused him to get quite significant problems. So he asked me, well, what effect does mercury have on the immune system? Mercury at high levels causes an autoimmune disease, but it damages the immune system. So mercury, lead, cadmium, arsenic, these are all heavy metals that I needed to check to see if you had it in your system, because I could keep pushing your immune system up, because your brother's immune system was not damaged. It was just not functioning because of the environment that it was in. So it was resilient. I could push it up, but with our treatment. But to be able to maintain it continuing up, we had to make sure that we checked for all of these different factors and causes of immune dysfunction. So that's the sort of whole approach that I like to take.
With Alzheimer's, I mean, I guess the same approach would be is to look at all of those factors, particularly heavy metal. I know that you've treated some patients, if I remember. So with Alzheimer's, what experience have you had with that? And what would you recommend in a situation where somebody has got Alzheimer's?
Well, I think that one of the issues that we face with Alzheimer's, and that's the reason why the studies that are currently being done to look for drugs to treat Alzheimer's, they're often not successful. There was one recently approved with a lot of controversy. The issue with Alzheimer's is that, first of all, Alzheimer's often starts 20 years before the onset of symptoms. Again, it's related to exposure to toxins, viruses, and various environmental factors that the person is exposed to, because what we understand about these neurological diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, ALS, is that these are all neuroinflammatory diseases. That is that within the brain, there are certain cells called microglial cells, which are supposed to protect the brain tissue. Well, these cells are there to protect the brain. And when they're exposed to these toxins, they actually will help to remove them. But if there's continuous exposure to these toxins, these cells become activated. And as they're activated, they stay activated. And then there's essentially damage occurring over that 20-year period. And eventually, when the numbers of memory cells have been lost, then the person begins to get damage. And the syndromes of ALS, et cetera, are all related to damage in different areas of the brain caused by this neuroinflammation. So our approach had been and has been to be able to reduce that neuroinflammation and reduce it fairly quickly by correcting the immune system. And when we've done that and we've kept the immune system strong and reduced the inflammation, which we measure in the peripheral blood, what we've seen is that progression of the disease stops. But if you have someone who is very advanced, those are very difficult to treat. So that's the reason why our approach is very useful to help people who are in the early stages, because if we correct the immune system, if we correct the neuroinflammation, we can stop the progression and stop the continuing damage.
Something I wrote a note down about, you said one of the best strategies is to prevent cancer and so therefore not to get it in the first place. Now, I've heard that, you know, we've all got cancer cells to some degree, but some people's cancers just get out of control and then you're diagnosed with cancer. Is that true? Have we all got cancer cells in our body? And the immune system is just there surveilling and dealing with it. But then at some point, there's a straw that breaks the camel's back, and hey, presto, you're diagnosed with an illness.
Yes, no, you're absolutely correct. We talked about the aging of the immune system.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the statistical peak of cancer, it tends to be, you know, individuals who are over 65. But what we're seeing now is that cancer is occurring at a much higher rate in younger people. So if we go with the aging of the immune system, between the ages of 18 and 40, a normal individual, their immune system is at its peak. So you're not likely to see cancer. Because what is a cancer cell? It's a cell where the DNA in which a mutation occurs that is at a specific point that causes that cell to lose its control of division and starts dividing uncontrollably. So there has to be mutations or damage occurring at specific points. Now, the cells of the immune system, if they're working well, and particularly cells we call natural killer cells, they can recognize those cells fairly quickly and they remove them. To prevent cancer, we've got to be able to precisely measure an individual's immune system in much the same way that when we treated you, I measured your immune system and saw that your brother's cells working in you were really not working. So there are many people whose immune systems are abnormal and are destined to get cancer. If we can catch them early before they get cancer and we can correct their immune systems, then we can prevent them from getting cancer. And that's essentially what my feeling is about what can be done.
So here I am sitting in England. I had a mini relapse before Christmas, October, when I had my test. I got asked to go into hospital early, didn't have the results, and I knew it was bad news. And I took the relapse at 0.01%, the lowest quantifiable relapse. I took that as kind of good news, given the fact I went back on the medication I'm now on, dasatinib, and we've had two all clears since then. Knowing what you know, what would you be suggesting to me as your patient?
Yeah, I think that what I would like to know is, where is your immune system now? And that's the reason why I'd like for you to come back and let me measure it and see. And essentially, the goal is to see where you are, and based upon that information is to correct it. And our goal, our strategy, our long-term strategy is basically to keep it corrected. And once we know that we've seen it corrected for a period of time, the next strategy is basically say, well, let's get some of your cells and put it away in the bank. Now, you might say, well, could we be collecting some cells which might be abnormal? Potentially, yes. But we also have long-term data from patients who've had leukemia, where you can still find some abnormal cells, but the immune system is strong and it just basically keeps it under control. So therefore, as long as we keep your immune system normal, then the chances of that happening again are extremely low.
I was offered blinatumomab for a month in hospital here, and I chose to come to work with you. Back in May 2017 was the first time. For somebody that was in my position when I had the first relapse, the prognosis was considered terminal. And what does the evidence and the research suggest about somebody's prognosis at that point?
Essentially, if you look at the outcome data, I think that the expected lifespan for you was 6 months.
It's crazy, isn't it? Here we are, 6 years later, training for a half Ironman.
Right. Yes, you are a walking miracle and an inspiration to others, to patients with cancer, because you made a decision that you were going to forego standard of care. But I think also you were aware of the toxicities. Number one is the outcomes, but as well as the severe toxicities associated with the standard of care. And I think that that's where, as a bone marrow transplant physician, I feel that is necessary for more doctors to keep looking to see how can we improve our patient's outcome, but really keep the toxicities as low as possible. And that's essentially why I developed our program. Our program would still be regarded as experimental, because if you remember, your insurance company refused to pay for it because they said it was experimental. Yes, it is experimental, but unless we come up with new ways of treating patients and we keep innovating, we will never be able to achieve the outcomes that you are demonstrating. And that would not have been possible unless you made that decision on your own to say, I choose to do this because I feel that it's a better choice for me. But that was a decision you had to make.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line was it was a race between my immune system and the disease. I felt like my immune system was getting stronger and stronger with what I was doing, and it was the push I needed to come over there. So there's a published report that Dr. Maharaj and his team have written on Future Science, which I will share in the show notes so you can actually see the treatment that Dr. Maharaj gave me. I always remember the natural killer cell function result. The first 6 week cycle, we went from nothing to 1.6%, is that right? And then it was,
yes.
Then after the second round, it was 5.1. Yes. And then I took a bit of a break and I went back and it got to 3.5, and then it shot up to 9.7. So just for the listener, what does that number mean and why is it so important?
So when we look at the natural killer cell function, we're looking at one component of the immune system, which is called the innate immune system. But we were also looking at another component of your immune system, which was the adaptive immune system, which were your T cells. And when you look at the pictures, you'll see also we talked about the natural killer T cells. And also we measured your levels of a protein called gamma interferon. Gamma interferon is produced by these cells of the immune system, which directly kills cancer cells and kill the leukemic cells. So we were looking at all of those together in tandem to be able to keep pushing them out so that we would be attacking the leukemic cells.
Wow. Yes. I can't thank you enough for helping patients that want to step into that path for themselves. It takes a lot of courage. And for me, you gave me confidence in a very testing situation. Like, you made me feel safe. And I think one of the biggest components for me is that healing of the mind and healing of the soul, you know. And how big a part do you think lifestyle, mindset and beliefs play in somebody's healing journey from what you've seen?
Oh, I think it's a tremendous role that it plays, because you and I, we would have long conversations about the effects of stress.
Yes.
And the effects of stress on the immune system. Stresses are created internally and externally. I mean, lifestyle factors and our exposure as children to different environmental conditions, the where we grew up, our exposure, our parents, what we're doing. These are all factors that often will go into our subconscious. It is affecting us. And from a scientific point of view, we have good data to suggest that when somebody is stressed, many times often they don't really know the reasons for that stress. They might think it's external, but it's really something that they have acquired at a very early age or even before that. So I think that this plays quite an important role, because when you look at the effects of stress on the cells we were measuring, you can find that there are many supposedly healthy individuals where their numbers are low. And if it stays low like that, they're going to get major diseases. And so if you remember, I would talk to you quite a bit about that. You've got to work on that. You've got to work on that to be able to get back to a position of healing, where the stresses that you were exposed to before and the factors that caused that were dealt with, and then also developing a strategy going forward to be able to deal with those types of stresses.
Yeah, I have to say, the physical part of the healing journey has been the easiest. Some might say the psychological and the emotional, that's been the biggest part of the journey, I believe. It took me 7 months where I was a passenger on the ship. Like, right, which way are we going? You know, you tell me where we're going and I'll paddle behind the boat. And it took me 7 months. I was looking for alternatives right from the moment I was diagnosed with leukemia. But it wasn't until 7 months later where I got off the fence and I was like, right, I can do this. If I helped create this, it's almost like the power of placebo. So everything else fell into alignment, knowing that I was going to get well. And I think for cancer patients, when so much of the power is taken out of their hands in a very structured system, like the people in the system are great, but the system is not serving people like you want to serve them. Like, I always remember you saying, like, N equals one as opposed to N equals 500. And I think that's such an important part of practice. Not found very often, is it?
Yes. I mean, I think that the approach that I take, which is basically that N equals 500, is you're looking at 500 individuals and looking to see in a controlled study that 500 in the control arm compared to the 500 in the study arm, you see a significant difference. But the problem is the 500 that's in the control arm and the 500 in the study arm, not everything is controlled for. And there are many variables that you can't really look at. And so since we know that cancer is a breakdown of immune surveillance, and when you reinstate immune surveillance, then cancer goes away. To me, it seems very simplistic to just look at your immune surveillance and see where it is and reinstate that, rather than having to depend on, well, what happened in the 500 where they all got one type of chemotherapy and the other 500 had got another type of chemotherapy, to see which group got the best type of chemotherapy. To me, that was completely missing the point of what the cause of cancer is and how we should really be approaching cancer.
I don't know if it's a good thing that I can't read the scientific papers and I'm not a doctor, because it's just a minefield out there, I have to say. But one of the things I heard, and I like to look at things from a helicopter view of what's going on. And so one of the things I picked up the other week on Jane McClellan's How to Starve Cancer is that a lot of modern medicine, conventional medicine, is targeted to the genetic characteristics of a disease, but we don't pay much regard to the metabolic part of the disease characteristics. So then she developed her own protocol to block the pathway. So good healthy nutrition, reducing inflammation in the body, all of the usual strategies can work. And where they can use off-label drugs to metabolically target. So it's almost like it's medicine, but it's not a bazooka or a machine gun. It's more of a tactical approach to keeping them weak, so therefore the immune system can then take them away. So can you just explain a little bit about my jumbled up explanation of that?
Yes, not at all. Again, I come back down to the fact that cancer is basically, it's caused by abnormal genetics. So you have cancer cells which basically are producing abnormal genetics, caused by abnormal genetics, which then produces proteins, because the end effect of the cellular mechanism is producing abnormal proteins. And these abnormal proteins, when secreted by cancer cells, they have a survival goal. and that is to suppress the immune system. So if you look at different types of cancers, and I'm going to go in a little bit of detail now in the paper, what we do know is that leukemic cells have certain antigens on the surface of the cells. We know that in leukemia cells, that MHC class 2 type antigens are actually suppressed, and that is to evade the immune system. So the genetics of the cell have been modified to cause the cell to evade the immune system. One of the mechanisms that we basically looked at in your case was by increasing gamma interferon. Gamma interferon causes the cancer cells to begin to express those antigens again. And when it expresses those antigens, then the immune system can recognize it and kill it. That's a sort of a taking the genetics with the proteins that are expressed and then how it evades the immune system and how to overcome that by going back at it with a protein, which can make the cancer cells more recognizable by the immune system, so the immune system can then kill them. That's the approach that we used in your case, to be able to get rid of the cancer and allow your immune system to come back up and to essentially stay up. Now, the other factors that we've talked about which could drop your immune system would be sleep, diet, exercise, and a host of other things, you know, toxins that you're exposed to. So we've got to take those into account. But my experience over the last 30 years as a transplant physician is that we get results when we correct the immune system, when we reinstate immune surveillance, and everything is centered around that. We destroy the cancer cells. In the approach I'm using is we look at the genetics of the cancer to identify mutations which are targetable. So if you remember in your case, you were on a tyrosine kinase inhibitor, which is basically targeting the mutation that causes the cancer. And we use that because we wanted to block the cancer cells, but the cancer cells were actually overcoming that drug. It's basically a precision approach drug. So it was blocking that. So we came in with stimulating other cells of your immune system to help your immune system to actually work together in conjunction with that targeted therapy, because the leukemic cells were actually evading the immune system in spite of being on that target.
Gosh, there's so much to learn, isn't there? I just have a team and do the work.
Yes.
For anybody that's interested to know a little bit more about what you do, is it just ill people that reach out to you, or is it healthy people?
We have both. And in fact, I would like to see more healthy people. Not that I don't want to see people who have problems to help them. But I think if we could shift the paradigm from a reactive approach, the reactive approach is a disease occurs and we come up with drugs to treat that disease. Mm-hmm. The proactive approach is recognizing that as we age, our immune system declines. So therefore, diseases of aging will occur, including cancer. So if we can do something early and we can maintain our health and our immune systems normally throughout the trajectory of life, like you have individuals who live to be 100 and healthy. When you look at their immune systems, it's normal. Their inflammation levels are low. I feel that it's possible for everybody to be in that train, to be in that pathway, but not everybody has the ability to do so. But we can help them by catching diseases early, but most importantly, helping them to maintain a healthy immune system. That's the way I see that for the future, we've got to basically prevent diseases rather than using a reactive approach to treat diseases as they come.
I think one of the things that you told me, or we talked about quite a lot, was the chronic versus acute inflammation and the difference in how that is the precursor to a lot of chronic and acute illnesses. So can you just explain the difference between the two and what causes it?
So when our immune systems are working well, and let's say we get an infection, what's needed to clear that infection is acute inflammation. But when the immune system is working well, that acute inflammation will last for a short period of time. And then there's a balance between acute inflammation and anti-inflammation. So it's like a seesaw, it's balanced. But if you have a dysregulation of the immune system or immune dysfunction, when the person, let's say, gets an infection, chronic inflammation occurs. But because the immune system isn't strong enough to produce the factors that produces the anti-inflammation, that is the seesaw, isn't able to go back up, then you have this balance of chronic inflammation and anti-inflammation. So that chronic inflammation is basically what causes damage over a period of time. And it's chronic inflammation that causes the diseases of aging.
The thing is that the prevention part of it is relatively not rocket science.
No, it's, I mean, let's look at it in a different way. If you look at
stress, studies, food, exercise,
it's all of those. But there might be people who would say, well, you know, I eat well, I exercise, you know, I'm sleeping well, pay attention to, you know, my diet, the four things that we talked about. And yet they still get diseases. Why is that? That's because there are some unknown factors within them. There could be toxins that they're being exposed to. We now know that there are viruses that people are exposed to that they acquire in their 20s that sit in the system, which helps to trigger the immune system earlier on. But later on, these viruses are actually triggering the immune system to wear it out and causes diseases of aging. So those are some of the things that many people are not able to explain. But as my research is on immune senescence, which is aging of the immune system. And so we're looking at all of these different factors to see what's causing the aging of the immune system. But it's not just looking at the factors that cause it. It's actually finding strategies and ways to be able to keep the immune system strong so that an individual will have a healthy immune system and low level of inflammation. And that's basically what centenarians are able to achieve. So if they can achieve it, we can help people to be able to achieve.
Are you still doing transplants now there, or is it just immunotherapy type treatments that you're doing there?
I'm no longer doing bone marrow transplants. And the reason for that is because I've been doing it long enough to see that patients who were successfully transplanted many years ago were coming back with the long-term complications of the high-dose chemotherapy, like secondary leukemias or secondary cancers. And I felt that we needed to change that approach. And that's the reason why our approach now is basically a precision, personalized immunotherapy approach, where we look at the genetics of the cancer to see if we can find a targeted therapy against that driver cancer gene. And at the same time, we're correcting the immune system. So we're doing it in a very precision-based approach. And so that's the approach that we're using now.
Immune regenerative medicine, which is personalized medicine, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So how do you stay on top of your health other than measuring your immune system, surveilling it? Like, what's your weekly strategy? And how do you stay ahead of the game? So you're practicing, you're treating patients. How do you keep ahead of the research and everything that's coming out?
If you look at the number of publications that comes out per day, it's about 167 publications that comes out per day on everything. I'm very focused in what I'm looking for, you know, what I read and what I'm doing. I keep up to date with my hematology, oncology, you know, what's going on. I go to meetings, but I feel that I need to practice what I'm preaching to my patients. I make sure I get enough sleep, the required number of sleeps that corresponds to a healthy immune system. I make sure I exercise. I make sure I eat well. So I'm doing all the various things that we discussed for myself because I want to make sure that I maintain a healthy life.
You don't look any older than when I came there last.
Well, thank you. That's a great compliment. So something is working, right?
Are you still on the bike?
Yes, my bike is it's a road racing bike. So I use that to be able to exercise on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking about you on my bike in the North Wales Hills training for my half Ironman.
Well, in Florida, it's all flat. So we have to find ways to be able to utilize the flat roads, but to be able to achieve the best, you know, the best performance.
Maybe we should do, I should do one of the Ironman events over
in Florida.
Would you sponsor me?
That's a good plan, yeah.
Yeah, the Maharaj Institute. Have you got anything else that you think would be useful to leave the listeners with in terms of some wisdom, some advice?
Yes, I think that it's important when faced with challenges in someone's health that they really consider all the possibilities. And I'm using your case as an example. You really looked at all the possibilities. You weighed up everything that was available and you kept an open mind and you also listened to yourself. That's, I think, what's important for listeners to do, because it's very easy to be swayed in one direction because of the forces, the external forces of what the establishment says. And I'm not saying I'm anti-establishment. I'm just saying that when there's a goal and the goal is basically to get better and to do well, and to maintain health, it's really important to do the research and to understand and to trust the person who's presenting the alternative.
You know, unfortunately, insurance doesn't cover things like stem cell harvest. They're not cheap. Dr. Maharaj is one of the only people in the world that do that. But if you have A, the time, B, the permission to travel because of COVID, and see the desire to really, A, check in on your immune system, so find out where it's at. How many markers do you test on an immune panel?
We're doing 100 markers.
They're all different parts of the immune system.
Yes, we look at the immune system from the stem cells all the way down to what we call the effector cells of the innate and the adaptive immune system.
And then, provided there's no tweaks necessary, then you can have your stem cells harvested and they can be the young warriors to be called forward for service. Perhaps if you harvested when you were 40, if you needed them at 50 or 60, you've got them, your younger self there to pull through. It just makes sense without the graft versus host and the transplant challenges, you know?
I mean, a good thing just to add about to what you're saying about advantages of harvesting the stem cells is that basically we're saying they're stem cells. They're really not just only stem cells. They're all the cells of the immune system that come from the bone marrow, which is where the immune system is produced. And the second thing is that during the process that we follow to be able to collect these cells, there's a 7 to 14 fold improvement in the immune system of the individual who goes through this. So not only do we improve their immune systems, but we also take some of that new and improved immune system and we bank it for them for the future.
And anybody that's lost on their healing journey and needs to reach out to Dr. Maharaj, you know, full contact details will be put into the show notes. Thank you so much for giving up your time and sharing your wisdom with us today. I don't have any other questions other than I look forward to coming back to America at some point to come and check A, my immune system, and B, to have another top up round of treatment.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure for me to see you. You know, we've corresponded by emails, but you're looking extremely well. Please keep up all the good work that you're doing, and my kindest regards to your family. And again, thank you for having me on the show. And your questions are, again, right to the point. And I can see clearly the goal is to be able to educate and to help others who might be in situations where they're not sure or they're looking for answers. So, again, our goal is to reach out and to be able to help.
I do have one personal question. Once somebody has a stem cell transplant, I have this question as to whether my system will function at the level it did before. Now, obviously, when I was in my 20s, you're naturally fit and I played a lot of sport. But I feel that with the training that I'm doing for this Ironman or half Ironman, that the adaptation of my body is not happening as quick as I would like building strength or building power. So should my system function well? Like, how many other stem cell transplantees? You know, because I've seen a lot of them, or I've not met that many, but they've all had complications of some description. And so I feel very lucky to sit here this well. Is it possible for me to get back to, you know, a high level of athletic performance?
It is, but what I was referring to earlier on was that the chemotherapy that you've been exposed to has caused some of your normal stem cells to actually become senescent. It's a fancy word for saying aged. I say it very carefully because, again, you look very, very young for your age, which I know. But that's a process that's going on internally. But the stronger you keep your immune system, essentially you can get rid of those senescent cells. So, again, aging and the effects of aging can be controlled by having a very strong immune system.
Just keep doing the work. That's what I'll do.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for giving up your time. I'm sure you have plenty to do, and I look forward to speaking to you again very, very soon.
Wonderful. Thank you again. Have a wonderful day, and it's a pleasure speaking to you, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon. Thank you.
So thanks for listening to Dr. Maharaj and myself in conversation all about immune regenerative medicine and how it was used on me. If you have found this interesting and think it could help someone, please share this episode and head on over to the show notes to see how you could help me and this show stay alive. Have a great day wherever you are in the universe.